Okay, go.
So I previewed Stronger 3 Workout 5 today because I want to do it tomorrow. And it involves cardio, like you do some strength training and then you do cardio upper body and then lower body. So for the upper body, you're doing kickboxing, and the lower body, you're doing like donkey kicks. And I mean, I probably don't really need to ask this question, but like I was just gonna try it and see, because I'm 3 months out with the hip replacement, and so I'm pretty safe at this point to do. I've been cleared to do everything, but I just don't know if that's good for me yet to do like the donkey kicks.
So when you say donkey kicks, we're still standing. You're doing a kickbox move, basically, right? Yeah.
Yes, kickbox moves, right.
Yeah. So I would say yes. I would say it's more about your stability. So if you are not worried at all about the stability, it's not the just your leg that would bother me for you. It's, and do you feel stable enough to support yourself while you're gesturing with the other one? Because anybody else here on this call think I didn't have hip replacement this year and I might not feel stable doing that, right? So that's where I would be concerned. But I mean, stand somewhere where you've got fingertips, you can put them on a back of a couch and do something. And don't go for high, just go for low, and the force and the doing of it and the validity of the doing the balance while you're doing the kicking. And I would give it a try. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Great question. All right. Good to see you here. Okay. I'm going to scroll from the top. So Jerry asked, what is plantar fasciitis? So, and I'd love for any of you to put down below in the comment, just put a heart or a thumb, or maybe you want to put a thumbs down. I don't know if you have had it or you deal with it right now, just so Jerry knows she's not alone. I'm guessing there's a reason she's asking. But so, for any and all of you, anything with itis, ITIS, means it was chronic coming on. You may have felt like suddenly I got this out of the blue, but you didn't. It came on over the course of months. And so a lot of people think, oh, I did a long hill run and then I got plantar fasciitis. It didn't come from that one time. It came from over time. We were doing something that was weakening those muscles, and or you're a woman who's over 40 and estrogen has declined. So connective tissue includes our tendons, our ligaments, and our fascia, that tissue that basically goes over our musculature and kind of ties us together. And it can get tight, it can make us feel tight. And when we haven't lost range of motion, but we still feel tight and tense, that's a good indication that it is the fascia. And it's kind of like if you would imagine the anatomy structure and the image that we all know, and you throw a hairnet over that anatomy and the muscles, that's essentially what our fascia is, kind of the role of it. So it lays over the top, and the muscle still dictates our shape, but your fascia can wreak a lot of havoc, make you feel tight. It can, in females more than males, and we get the two for one for whatever reason, but our fascia doesn't behave as well when you look under a microscope at male versus female fascia. Theirs lays in very uniform ways and ours doesn't. We tend to get it crossed, and it's kind of like scar tissue almost for us. So when you go to a massage therapist, or you use your Theragun or massage gun or a rolling pin or a stick, or get somebody to rub your shoulders and they find a knot, that is often not just a knot in the muscles, but there is usually something going on also with that fascia or the connective tissue. So if you've done foam rolling, foam rolling is meant to target your fascia. And yeah, we all feel it on our muscles as well, but the real benefit is we're not stretching those muscles, right? We're actually getting to the fascia that lays across those muscles. so that if we do a stretch afterward, it will be far more effective. And you may simply support the fascia and get off the floor feeling like, oh my gosh, I feel so much looser, even though you didn't stretch. So that is what fascia is. It's throughout our whole system. It kind of holds us together in parts, but sometimes holds us together too well and binds us up in certain ways. The plantar fasciitis, and again, coming back to we started with itis. So tendonitis, bursitis, those kinds of issues are a long time in coming and developing. And they can be related to females more so than males to the drop of estrogen because that decreases our connective tissue, decreases our collagen production, keeping those tissues healthier. So that can be why we see so much of it in women over 40. In fact, women 40 to 60 are probably the widest range of plantar fasciitis, also of bursitis. Shoulder or tendonitis, or many of you have experienced shoulder, frozen shoulder or elbow tendonitis. Maybe you call it tennis elbow or golf elbow. So many of those things. We also know carpal tunnel, a little less related. It has to do with the narrowing, literally, of the funnel at the wrist and because of overuse, but often that is an overuse syndrome. And it can also be related not just to a decline of hormones. So, not every woman who goes through menopause and has a decline of hormones gets plantar fasciitis or bursitis or any of these other things, but it does happen. And one of the other contributors is nutrition. So, we can get by with a lot of things, and we probably all have. We've all squeaked by maybe not getting as many vegetables or not consuming enough or absorbing the things that we were consuming, and maybe too many Diet Cokes and wreaking havoc on our lining and our gut means that we don't absorb things as well. And we've all probably been guilty of something that wasn't ideal or pristine in nutrition. And that cumulative effect, by the time we're 40, 50, 60, 70, there starts to be the body comes for you with receipts and says, oh, by the way, do you remember all that Diet Coke you had in grad school? Hello. And so it can show up from injuries, chronic injuries, and can show up in bone density. And some of you are insulted that you've lifted and exercised your whole life and thought you were conscious about nutrition, but we just can't escape all those things. So it's very hard to say, that there's a cumulative effect of a combination of a lot of things. But basically, what is happening, and when we talk about plantar fasciitis in the bottom of the foot, we have about six layers deep of muscle, and that those plantar muscles run from our heel to our toes to the ball of our feet, and in lots and lots of threads. And those plantar muscles are then covered with the fascia. Well, that fascia gets inflamed and often has to do with heel pain. That's often the first sign for some women, not all, starts to burn at the heel and get inflamed at the heel. And then pretty soon you're finding there's pain after exercise, then there's pain during exercise, and then there's pain before, during, and after, basically all the time. And you stop being able to wear the same shoes that you used to be able to wear. Sorry, I'm right next to the window and there's fire trucks. So hopefully that's not interrupting. But we have to look at all cause, and say, okay, yes, and we can't go back. We can't change the history, but we can change what we're doing now. So generally, the rule of thumb is you want to wear shoes all the time. So when you go to bed, you no longer wear backless shoes, period, end of story. If you have flip-flops, there's a garbage can, and that's a good place for them. But even heels that are like wedges without heels or clogs, those kinds of mules, not your best friend, because what you're doing is making the foot contract twice. So it contracts once just to step down and roll through it. You're making it do it again to keep that shoe on, and you don't know it. We don't think about it, but it is happening. So it's a much greater strain on your foot. So we need shoes, just a good pair of shoes on your feet to support it. Ironically, that may not be all the ways that you heal. We need to strengthen the muscles in the foot because we've for years been in shoes, right? And the new way to raise a baby is to keep them barefoot as much as possible because all of the nerve endings in the foot actually help them be stronger throughout their whole body. And we now are going back to it. So you probably heard me talk about I've been avoiding the five-toe shoes, no gravity shoe, barefoot shoes for 20 years. I mean, at least 2 decades. People have been trying to get me to use them. I'm like, oh, thank you. And so now I'm actually using them and realize that yes, as weird as they feel and as different as they look, the rest of me feels amazing wearing them. It's not about the feet that you feel it first. You feel it because your feet are your foundation and your kinetic chain, your posture improves. You're holding yourself different and you're aware of your whole body so much more. So I try to wear them every time I can, but I still have to think about it. They're not the first pair I reach for. But we have to strengthen that foot after we decrease the inflammation. So you decrease the inflammation by stopping a lot of things that you've been doing. You may not be able to walk as much, swimming, getting in a swimming pool, not necessarily water walking, but actually treading water, water running with a buoy belt on, or literally swimming, rowing machine, bicycling would be better for you to avoid walking and being on your feet for a long period of time. Wearing supportive shoes, not, high heels, you probably wouldn't want to because you'd be in pain. And making sure that you have a shoe that actually fits your foot. So now's the time if you've never gone to a really great shoe store to get footed or to get fitted, footed, yes, you do it. And so sometimes that's a brand name store. You may find a chain, but it's only as good as the one person who's actually working with you. So ideally, they run you through a foot fit. They need to be asking things like, let me see the bottom ups of your shoes. They need to be looking, are you flat footed, have a neutral arch, or are you high arched? Do you pronate? Do you supinate? Or are you neutral? What do you want these shoes for? Let me see you walk or run. And they generally have a treadmill there. All of those things need to be true. So we don't go saying, what kind of shoe do you like? Because somebody else's shoe is not yours. And every brand has a division of supination, pronation, stability shoe, cushion shoe. And so you want to get something that's supportive of yourself. And ultimately, you're potentially going to want to strengthen your foot, not just rely on the shoe itself. But you're going to have to heal from that plantar fasciitis first in order to do it. Here's the problem that a lot of women tolerate, that they just have it, and now they're always going to have it. And itis gets better. You don't have bronchitis that you got when you were 12. And similarly, this, you get over it, you get better. We have to bump up, not in this case, your immune system, but your connective tissue. We need to take a look at your nutrition. Could that have been a part of it? And we know that estrogen declines. Are you doing replacement? Is that an option for you that you want to consider? And that's probably not a quick solution. So it's not going to heal something that already happened. But you should know, and you should know, we should all know to pass this on to our daughters. That's another reason we are much more injury prone starting in our 40s because of those changes to estrogen. So it's an overlooked. We talk about bone, we talk about muscle now very often, but we don't talk nearly as much about the connective tissue and the challenges with that. So overuse, yes, but it's not from a one time I went on this really hilly route. That probably triggered it. That was the the straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing, but it didn't cause it, not by itself. That was there a long time. So now you do need to avoid steep hills, steep inclines. You would be somebody that I would say, if you're going to do squats, you might want to elevate your heels because we want to give that Achilles tendon and the calf that inserts into it, because all of that connects to the under part of your foot. We want to give it as much space as possible, as opposed to stretching it as much as possible. So hopefully for Jerry, who I think is not here, that explains a little bit. If anybody else has comments on plantar fasciitis or has something that they want to add, please, please do. Jerry, you're here. Did we answer your question? Wow, yes. Okay, good. All right. And I hope you were asking premeditative to avoid, and not that you have it, but there's that. Okay. What causes thinning hair as we age? Couple of things can. So one, micronutrient deficiency can be related to thyroid issues or thyroid function. So the first couple of micronutrients that come to mind are B vitamins and zinc. But those also will support your thyroid function. If you don't have enough B vitamins, your thyroid actually won't function, even if you're taking thyroid replacement or support. So could be those, but we can't really shoot blanks. And if you suspect it's micronutrient deficiency, that's one thing, but that might mean you're not getting enough of them in, or it might mean your gut health needs to be addressed because you're getting them in but not absorbing them. So there's two components to something. There's usually not one easy answer. So kind of got to look a little bit more deeply at root cause, and you start with one thing, and you might look at, okay, I'm going to test my micronutrient levels, including those two that I talked about, but I wouldn't end with those. I'd look at, a wide variety of them, and then say, okay, for 3 months, I'm going to make sure that I'm pulling those up to adequate level by taking X amount of each and then retest. And if you're not absorbing those, your levels have not changed after doing that, then you might want to look to a stool test to work with somebody on, okay, I've got to get my gut right so that I'm absorbing those kinds of things. So I hope that helps. Shanna says, why do my butt and hamstrings never get any more comfortable with the standing hamstring curls that we often do in warm-ups? Interesting. I've been doing these for a year now, and it never takes long for me to feel like I'm too fatigued in my butt and hamstrings to keep going as long as you do. Interesting. I might try, if I were you, knowing that happens, do a little foam rolling if you've got one. Do a little foam rolling before you start to see if that doesn't help. And if you don't have a foam roller, I wouldn't run right out and get one. But if you have a rolling pin in your kitchen, do a little rolling on your own hamstrings before you start. See if you can make that any better. But I would say it probably has something to do with circulation or your tight. So I'm wondering about your range of motion in those muscles. When you bend over, do you touch your hands on the floor with ease? When you come in and out of yoga poses, do you feel stiff? Does that flow pretty smoothly? What is that like? So answer that question for me. Carolyn said, listen to your podcast about creatine. Great info. So, should I give up on the HCL that I've been using because the MCL gives me bloating, and try to adjust to MCL? So I'm going to read that question out loud to you. Did you put in there exactly what you wanted to? Because I'm not quite following. So your question is, should I give up on the HCL that I've been using because the MCL gives me bloating? I tried to and try to adjust to MCL. So
Hi.
hi.
Hi. So, yeah, sorry, I'm cooking dinner. So, I was like, I got to
Okay.
get this question in. So, I've been using the HCL creatine because when I use the MCL, it really gave me, bloating, the typical gas, that you say women have when they use it. So, I switched to the HCL. But after listening to that podcast, all of that research and all of the goodness they say comes from the, I don't even know if it's MCL, it's monohydrate.
It's mono.
So, yeah, so that's where I'm wrong there. So, should I give up on my HCL and just try to slowly adjust the mono into my diet so I get all that goodness?
Not necessarily, no. You're getting potentially you're getting the goodness. The real takeaway was most of the research has been done to date on mono. It doesn't mean that you're not getting the goodness from the HCL. It's just there is so less of the research done on that compared to mono. But you are getting like a much more rapid absorption. For each that you're taking, probably your level of absorption is even better. So if you are getting the bloating, the real message for everybody is that the bulk of the research, if you look up monohydrate creatine versus HCL, is going to be on mono because it's been out there for decades. And the HCL is more new to mainstream market. So there hasn't been enough to look at, okay, let's compare these two. And I think we're going to see the opposite, in terms of which one gets better results. But absolutely, if something's causing you the bloating, I would say you're probably not going to get the results from it. Does that help?
Yes, absolutely. I'll
Okay.
keep with my HCL. I'm happy to hear that because I
Good.
enjoy that one. Thank you.
Yep. What's for dinner?
I made two different types of ground chicken. One's like a Mediterranean blend, and the other one is like a taco blend for my 20-year-old. He doesn't like the Mediterranean spices. And I made some sautéed peppers and some chickpeas and some jasmine rice.
Man, I'm coming over.
Yeah, it's dinner time here in Pennsylvania. So, anytime you're in this area, you're more than welcome.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Jennifer says, hello. Can you talk more about sodium butyrate? That is perfect. I knew what you meant. Mentioned that you had acne and it helped with that. What other symptoms does it help with? So it is mostly for gut lining. And so super helpful for, I think it will help with cravings as well. But one of the biggest things is the gut lining and the health of the gut. And this is probably 2026, the year of the gut, if I could claim any word, right? I think last year was maybe the year of longevity, or maybe the year before, and last year was menopause, but definitely, we're talking all about the gut today, and we have tipped into that already, right? With absorption of certain things being so very important. So it's primarily, and that's how I know, almost always how I know. So breakouts, at 62 is how rude, right? It's just rude. But that's how I know. It's you can generally say that's probably either liver or it's your gut. And so for me, I mean, the very obvious is, digestive bloat, backup, diarrhea. But if you don't have those, a little harder to detect. But usually skin issues are it's a telltale sign. I think we're beyond the stage where, certain little things in life are stressful enough to cause us to really break out from them. We don't have the same hormones that we did when we were teenagers or in our 20s or pregnant either. So definitely gut lining. I also talk about butyrate with ketones for one of the products that we have that is Burn Boost in the store. So the salts that help you get into ketosis or stay in it, say if you were trying to extend a fast in the morning. So the Burn Boost is there because it's got leucine in it. So if you choose to fast and you want to a little bit more, you want to help yourself kick into a higher state of ketosis, the sodium butyrate will actually help you do that. And because it's got sodium in it, we kind of crave, I think a lot of us think we crave sugar, but it actually sodium gives us our energy. And so when we've got some of that on board, we kind of squelch the hunger signals, the cravings. So that can go away, help you fast a little bit longer if you're trying to or you want autophagy, and yet have some leucine and high protein on board. So it's present in two places, but the level of the amount that I'm taking from the sodium butyrate from BodyBio is much higher than, just that dose that I'll take occasionally if I'm doing, a morning where I'm just extending my fast a little bit, but I want to have some protein on board, the essential amino acids. Anyway, hope that was helpful. Renee said, besides good stretching, what are the best exercises to prevent or help a sciatica issue flare up? Well, and I'm going to be a little contrarian for you. So one of the things you do want to avoid is if you have a sciatica issue, you don't want to overstretch. The very thing that makes you feel better temporarily is kind of like crack for a cocaine addict. Like you want it, and then you want another hit of it. Like that stretch feels really, really good. But what you're doing is actually prolonging the problem. It's kind of like you've got inflammation in there, and then you go in there and you're stretching it, but you're actually causing more inflammation. And so it feels good temporarily. But again, there's evidence that that is actually the opposite of what we want you to do. We want you to rest it. We want you to do things that help you get into alignment, so that the right and the left are a little bit more balanced, because you're probably starting to favor with a limp or a just a compensation that you don't even detect and maybe somebody else can't. So we want you to do things that are more balanced, and if not walking or lifting in a squat, for instance, potentially not getting into the water if you can. Navel to nipple depth is perfect, so your lungs are not submerged. So you're getting a little help, a little relief. So if you're feeling like pain and not able to walk on land or very much, you're getting into water is probably going to relieve some of that because your body doesn't have to carry the weight. But you're also not so submerged that you're floating away. So you want to be there. But then if you're trying to avoid it, then coming back to your, yoga practice where you're spending time one leg forward and the other leg forward and really kind of working through range of motion, your hip, your lower back. And as we loosen up the hips, we keep the hips mobile. We loosen up the pressure and the tension on the lower back, and alignment in the knee also gets better, and all of that kind of domino effect for the kinetic chain helps to keep you better aligned and avoid that from happening in the first place. And then it's also, yoga is wonderful really for core exercise, but for those of you, if anybody's turned off or yoga doesn't fit into your spiritual or religious beliefs, just focus on good stretching in a lunge, runner's lunges, and holding into poses where you're really opening up your hip joints, just to again keep the if the hips are mobile as well as strong, but we probably need the mobility first and then strength after that, your lower back and your knees will both be a little bit more comfortable and everything will be a little bit more aligned. The only other thing that I would suggest is if somebody has a history of sciatica, is looking at your leg length and making sure you don't have a leg length discrepancy, because it tends to kind of come with more faulty, challenges through the hip and the lower back, and there may be a predominance of sciatica if that's true. So I hope that was helpful. Terry said, would the workout snacks, the 10 or 12 minute longevity videos, be added on top of the other workouts for the day? How many times a day to do these on which workout days? So I wouldn't do more than once. Just you don't need to do overkill. And you don't necessarily need to do it on the same day. If you have the time and you have the energy, you feel great, then you can certainly do them on the same day. But those are meant to be little ways so that you can get in those other components that we want to sneak them into a warm up and or to a cool down or between your workout sets, or we want to drop them in like these little longevity snacks. So you're getting that dynamic stability. So not just stand on one leg and hold yourself here because we rarely fall that way. Let's just be honest, right? But if I'm forcing you to do a side lunge and come to a knee, and you're doing that for a minute on each side, back and forth. So 30 seconds each, you're getting some dynamic balance. And then we shift your brain into doing something else, going to the rear or doing a quicker movement to the side, slowing down again. So those are great ways just to sneak in, give yourself an energy burst to get up if you're sitting. If you're doing something standing for a long period of time, your body also needs the break. And that's kind of, I'm called back to fascia because it's the way we started with this today. But when you look at runners or even walkers who go for a long walk, and that's relative to you or to me, it's not necessarily this has to be a marathon. But if you're not used to walking for an hour and you walk for an hour, it's potentially somebody's going to come back and say, I feel stiff. My lower back doesn't feel great. And part of that is the fascia. If we walk at the same speed, the same gait, about the same stride length for a long period of time, long again, relative to you and me, we are kind of locking our fascia into that. So it's very true for, someone. My experience has been when I've done longer and longer distances running, while running, I would get stiff. And the reason is, again, you're at a pace. You're kind of just floating at the same pace. And it's really so much better for you to take some small steps, small short steps, go a little faster, not necessarily even faster, but change the tempo of your stepping, take some long strides, breaking it up changes the fascia, and you will feel much better, much longer. So these kinds of little breaks cause you, even if you're standing, you're moving around, you get out of that rigid position that you're in, the limited kind of cage that your body's in, and you do some things laterally, forward, back with some rotation, and you're going to feel so much better. So, all of those little pieces, dynamic stability, the agility, the little bit of power, a little bit of ground reaction forces. And you can put them in every day if you want to, but I would try to hit those 3 or 4 days a week. Remember, walking is a staple. We ideally would want walking every day. And then your strength training twice weekly. Slip in those longevity snacks wherever you are comfortable with them. But I wouldn't say multiple times a day. I would say go for a walk, do one of those. And you're good to go, but probably then spend some other time if you want to do other exercise time, do some stretching or some yoga. Improving your mobility would be a more optimal balance. Great question. So a lot of people with plantar fasciitis or a history of it in the past, at least. How is the Boulder retreat? Speak about some of the experience from it. Yes. So super fun, beautiful weather. We always seem to get really lucky with Boulder. June is just the sweet spot. So the other sweet spot is probably September. It's just a little more challenging with conferences and things that fall in September to get back there. But lots of fun, great hikes, great food, great venues. We did a single Airbnb. So everybody was under one roof, kind of two big wings of this house. And everybody loved that piece of it. So we will definitely be doing that again. So lots and lots of fun. We had a few people do paragliding in the park. We had a few other people say, oh, heck no, happy to be on the ground. Thanks very much. So we had a ground crew and we had some flyers, but a lot of fun. So a little nerve-wracking, just, for some thinking, do I, don't I? And, then being up there. So, very cool experience for everybody. Nancy said, advice for how to mentally not being able to lift weights due to a shoulder injury. It's been a month and I see an ortho doctor tomorrow. I am doing leg and ab work plus walking and some biking. Yes. So it's really easy to be on the side of the screen that I am giving advice. So I'm going to say that first. So take that with a grain of salt because it's really easy when you're not the one injured. But I think, having been in your shoes and or on your couch, maybe if that's it, I've been injured a couple of times in my life, and it is probably one of the hardest places. And the good news is that you want to be doing it, and you remind yourself that you want to get back to it, and that you're doing the smartest thing that you can right now. And you are doing something valuable by paying attention to the abs and the leg or the glute challenge work. That I think is really important that you reinforce yourself. And so everybody here needs to hear that because I think every single one of us could fall into that spot where, something happens, you didn't see it, misstepped, there was gravel on the trail, you fell. Lots of little things can go wrong, even for somebody apparently healthy and strong and got all the things going in the right direction. Life can change really quickly. So, got to remember you're banking muscle and you're doing everything that you can. And I think too that when it comes to like the glute challenge and the ab work, that you're kind of doing some extra things that otherwise you wouldn't have time or the energy to do if you weren't injured. And because of it, you may come back stronger. We started talking about plantar fasciitis, and I didn't have plantar fasciitis, but I had a deep plantar muscle tear. So, 5 or 6 layers deep, that muscle I tore. And my podiatrist, when he took the x-ray, he said it. He said, this is what's going on. I said, well, okay, what do we do about that? And he's like, well, if you were, I don't know who he mentioned at the time, Michael Jackson or you or somebody else, we'd do surgery on it. But because you're not, we just let it heal. And he said, even if we did surgery, there was a chance we wouldn't get to it, that the surgery itself you'd have to recover from, and there's no guarantee for that. So instead, I rehabbed over the course of a year to get myself back up to speed. That is now my stronger side because I rehabbed it so well. I distinctly know the difference between the strength of each foot and each leg, and when your foot is your foundation, upstairs generally comes along for the ride. And so I want you to realize that what you're doing right now also may be setting you up for greater success in the future. You're working on your core and you're working on your glutes, which really qualifies as core, by the way, and you will never regret strengthening those muscles. So think about those things and reinforcing the fact that skipping them because you don't have time, because you're doing the strength training, may have prevented you from creating as strong a foundation as you had. So all of that rehab and all those stupid heel raises that I did for a year feeling ridiculous, you know, next to a weight machine where someone else was putting on stacks of weights and I was putting my fingertips on it to do my heel raises. It all pays off in the end if you stick with it. So I hope that was at least a little bit helpful. Scrolling in Chanda says, I have very open hamstrings. Heels go to the floor in down dog and palms flat on the floor in forward folds. Could that be a sign of weak hamstrings? Not necessarily a sign, but generally, if you've got lots of mobility, it can be a sign of less strength or better way to say it is less stability. So the more flexible you are, we see lots of hypermobile yoga instructors because they're really good at it, right? Because it's easy for them. A lot of them are actually double jointed. And then you wonder, why can't I do that like her? Well, unless you're double jointed, you're probably not going to. So it could mean a lack of stability, but that doesn't give me a reason to say, why do you feel that? So you feel fatigue, Shanna, when you're doing those hamstring curls. So she's talking about, so we're sidestepping and pulling the heels to the glutes. Everyone, just so that you're kind of mentally following along with that. And you feel your glutes and your hamstrings fatigue first. So confirm that for me if you would. It's not necessarily an indication that you're weak, but less stable, more so. Shannon, do you want to talk?
Yeah, I'll just say yes.
Yes.
Yes, that I just, I've been doing those now and like they were terrible at first and I thought, oh, they'll get better as I go along. And now for a year I still do those and I'm like, oh, can we stop, please? I mean, sometimes you don't do them quite as long in the warm up, so it's not so terrible, but there's times I'm like, really, aren't we done yet?
Can you tell me what happens when we do hamstring curls on the floor with the ball?
I kind of make it through some of those and then poop out.
Okay. Are they getting better or are they still kind of the same?
They're improving. I mean, part of my problem with the ball was that I had trouble balancing on it and like all kinds of other things was falling off of it and a million other things. So it took me a while to sort of get the ball rodeo out of the way. And then as once I got the ball rodeo out of the way, I have improved a little bit from that, but it's not like any really impressive improvement.
Do you have a, I call it a Versa loop is the name of it, like a band, a circular band that you can put up above your knees? Do you happen to have?
Not that, I mean, I have the stretchy band, the stretchy thing, the things that come in colors, whatever they're called, the elastics. And I might have like one that's like a thin rubber one that just showed up at some point in time in my life, but no, I don't have
So, okay.
the first bands.
Can you tie them in a circle or are they circles or are they just
Yeah,
long and flat?
well, I can tie them.
Okay. So I would, and this is going to seem like, how did you get there? Probably, but I would try some work on your glute medial muscles and see if that doesn't change something. So, do this on days between or days when I'm doing a set of hamstring curls and you're kind of done with that. Or as a substitute, if I do this, you do that. Put it around your above your knee. And then if you're on the floor, do a bridge with your feet flat, your knees up, and then work on moving your leg out to the side, kind of like a step crunch. But your hips are in a bridge. So I want you to, you're stabilizing with one glute med that's on the floor, and you're working the other one. They're both on. And you can do that in a standing position as well, or sidestep multiple times, not letting the band pull you back together, but keeping it with some space. So I'm wondering if we strengthen your glute medial muscle, if we can take a little pressure off of the hamstrings and the glutes, glute maximus, because that's really what you're using when you're back there. I have no guarantee that that will work, but I want you to try it.
Okay. Well, it actually makes sense that I need to do it because it's one of those things that, like, if you've ever done those kinds of things in other sessions, I'm like, ew, and I do them, and it's like, please make them end. And so it probably means that I need
It's calling you.
to
Yeah.
do them. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not exactly calling me, but it's making it clear that I probably need to do them.
Yes. Okay. So commit for 3 weeks in a row. I'm going to do these regularly, 2 to 3 times a week, and then come back and let's check in on that again.
Okay, thank you. I
And y'all heard her say that. So, okay. Okay.
right.
Little accountability group here. Okay. Jennifer, do you have suggestions for starchy vegetables to make during summer with dinner that don't involve the oven? Trying to increase my carbs at dinner, but not heat up my house. Okay, so round up all of you smart women here who's got an idea on this. So you could do them on the stove somehow, stir frying, if you want to do that instead. Something has to be heated up, or you can, if you're grilling, which any food on the grill, in my opinion, tastes better than any food not made on the grill. But you could probably do a sweet potato or squash on the grill. It's going to take a little bit longer. Cut them up, you know, and put them in baskets. But that would be another way to get them in. Anybody else have some ideas they want to share? I'm going to scroll down. Canned beans. Yep. Jicama. I don't think jicama is going to qualify as a starchy vegetable, is it? Microwave your baked potato. Air fry. Grilling veggies wrapped in tin foil. Don't use tin foil, okay, guys? That gets absorbed heavy metals into your food. Don't use it. Throw it out. Even the shelter doesn't need your tin foil, okay? But yes, grill them. But even in those packets, over, you knew that would be controversial. Only if you don't want to absorb heavy metals, okay? Okay. Colleen, I'm going to read this. So I think this is regarding weak hamstrings and have trouble with hamstring curls as well. Figured out the only thing that works for me is outside of the stronger program, excuse me, to do glute exercises. Like Deborah mentioned, I do squats, deadlifts, clams, and bridges with no ball, and it's slow. I have to be consistent. Good share. Thank you for that. Anybody else? AI says jicama is technically a starchy tuber, but it can behave more like non-starchy vegetable because it's made of up to 90% water. Yeah, and it's rich in fiber. Minimal impact on blood sugar and widely classified as a non-starchy vegetable for dietary purposes. So I think you're right. Doesn't count. Okay, not necessarily trying to be right, but I was about to be corrected. I know that. So good to know. Okay. Jennifer says, thanks for the explanation about stiffness. I'll remember that as a teacher, try and slip in some different moves between classes or during my prep period. Perfect. And thank you. Could foam rolling help me with the sciatica issue? So Renee asked that, and I would say, Renee, when you're not in a flare, potentially yes. When you are in a flare, I would leave it alone again, because I think what you want to do is trying to work more on putting yourself back into alignment, and we want to, you're inflamed basically. So we want to decrease the inflammation and then come to it when you're feeling good. Which is probably not the time you tend to think about it. You're wondering, what do I do when I don't feel good? Jerry said, I completed my Stronger 10 at the end of May, and my program didn't officially end, so I started over at week one, imagining I should contact support. So, Jerry, if you're in the app, you're in charge at all times. So, support doesn't need to do a thing. You can just go. So, are you getting emails? If you're getting emails, then yes, we can let them know you shouldn't be getting emails because they're right there in the app now. And so, some of you may still be on that because the automation runs if it got started, and we can't like globally remove an automation that you're already in. We'd need to go one by one, and that's a little tedious. But Jerry, inside of the app, you can start a program whenever you're ready and just move and open up the other program. But if you're getting emails, that's interesting and correct. You should not be. I'm scrolling just to make sure I've got all questions. So if you have another one you want to add, I think I've got some comments here. Jerry said no emails. Okay, didn't know I was in control. You are the boss. You are in control. The words every woman wanted to hear her whole life, right? You are welcome. Gay says it is so hard for me to sit on the floor in a cross-legged position while doing yoga. What's going on? Is it tight hips? Potentially, yes. So here's the way we'll know. So what I often will recommend while I'm doing a cool down like that, sitting on the floor, is roll up your mat and then put it right under your bum. And if we elevate you an inch or 2 inches, play with how high. But if you get elevated, is it suddenly more comfortable for a longer period of time? And if the answer to that is yes, tight hips. Yes. So now you have, okay, I know the problem. So what's the answer? And it's not trying to force yourself to sit cross-legged on the floor, uncomfortable for more times. It's, potentially go to one of the corrective hip exercises or the hip opener challenges and, look at that. And because you have access to the challenges in a way that you can see all of the videos, you don't necessarily have to say, oh, I'm going to do this from day one to day two, just exactly as it's written. You can, but you can also find a specific video that this one feels really good to me, maybe when I'm done, or this one doesn't feel good at all. That might be the one you need. And you can favorite that or put it in your calendar to repeat a few times. And those are the things that you want to do is find, okay, now that I know it is my hips that are tight, let's see if I can find a hip challenge or a hip opener. Most of the hip challenges will be that hip openers. And that would be the best way to go. So yes, try that. That's your answer. If you elevate those hips when you're sitting on the floor, that gives your knees a little more lax and latitude to kind of come down. And while you're sitting there, if the hips are really tight, the knees are probably much more like this. So if you are able to relax them just a little bit, the hip flexors and the muscles in the side of the hip can kind of relax a minute, and that'll probably feel better. So you can try that. Jerry said, does that mean technically I could exercise in a different program? Ideally, I know I shouldn't, but I know I like a certain warm up from Stronger One. Yes. So, Jerry, you can favorite. So, go into that warm up in Stronger One and favorite that, or put it on a playlist, or drag it to your calendar for the days that you strength train. Yes, you can. And the video police are not coming over there, I promise, right? So when we're talking about the workouts, they have been planned. So each of those 12-week workouts, workout one has a relationship with workout two, and workout two has a relationship with what you did in one and what you'll do in three. So there is a progression. It's not random. Like, I'm going to go do a workout and I'm just going to go find something on YouTube. So we really don't want the app to be for you like this is a YouTube. So for those of you who've been here a little bit longer, and we very rigidly said, I want you to commit to a program. And because you're in it, you can't get out unless you come and ask us. So we know that you can all manage yourselves, but we do want you to kind of think, this wasn't an accident. So 40 years of thinking about programming and teaching others to program went into this, and it wasn't random. So we just want you to think about what makes sense, but we also want you to know life gets messy. You're going to have a disruption. Sometimes you need to be able to go and choose something else that fits your this week or your next week, or hop out of a program and go into a reset because your fatigue level is just demanding that you do that and do that so that you'll feel better long term. So I hope that helps. For the plantar fasciitis, foam rolling won't necessarily or won't ideally help. So you're not, with a foam roller, unless you have a really narrow, small one, and they do make them, but you can do some foam rolling on it when you're able to tolerate it. But what you want to do is do it sitting down so that you're just running the weight of your foot and you're controlling how much pressure am I putting on that. So a tennis ball, something soft, and you're, so if I were, here's a table right here. So if this were my foot, I might put the tennis ball under it, and then I would roll between my heel and my big toe. And I would roll between my heel and my second toe and back and forth like this. And then I might say, okay, I'm gonna grab and try to wrap my foot around it and then splay and repeat that. And putting a little pressure on that is good if it's good, if it feels good. So if you are in a lot of pain, really inflamed, you don't want to put yourself in pain. So the idea is let's increase the circulation. Let's start getting a little bit stronger. But that's one activity. Another one is lay out a hand towel, something that's not too thick, like your bathroom towel. It's probably too thick, but lay it out on the floor, put your foot right here, and then you're going to scrunch it all underneath you with your toes. So you're going to gather that towel and it's going to come down and gather it, and then you're going to grab it, you're going to put it out, just like doing repeats of a set. You're going to take your toes, and those toes are curling because the muscles in the bottom of your feet are curling them. So those are some exercises that you can do for the bottoms of your feet and those muscles. You can also be barefoot, standing on the floor, just literally standing on the floor, and think about lifting the arch of your foot. And it's something that most of us don't think about because we slap the arches of our feet into really highly cushioned exercise shoes. Pay close attention, I think, within the next 2 weeks. A podcast episode that I did with Mark Sisson. Probably that name will be familiar to you, The Daily Apple and Primal Kitchen. So I don't know about you, but I know I've got a Primal Kitchen salad dressing in the door of my refrigerator right now. I think I have Primal Kitchen ketchup in there too. But, he made the palouvas, and I said, how did you get here? Like, from salad dressing to, five-toe shoes. That's kind of a leap. Can you explain to me why you got here? And so we talked a lot about his background, and that'll be an interesting one. But your foot, if we put them into protective shoes and supportive shoes our whole lives, which sounds like a great idea initially, actually means the muscles of our feet got ADD. They didn't have to do anything, didn't have to pay attention. And so they've gotten weaker. And so going barefoot once you're recovered, and in standing positions when you're, sorry, not putting weight on them necessarily, but you're doing this towel gather and you're doing some rolling. So not so much foam roller because the foam roller is 6 inches in diameter. So going over it, you're not really rolling that fascia at all. But you want to get a little deeper and do it with something like a tennis ball so that you can really get into it. So I hope that was helpful. Colleen said, I really love the progression of each program. Spent a lot of time trying to find workouts and it was difficult to make progress. Really valuable to be able to follow a specific program that progresses each week along with the explanations of what we're doing and why. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you for saying so. Thanks. Okay. I think we got all the questions. I'm going to let all of you go. And thank you so much for being here. So, all of you who ask questions, realize that for everybody not here, you also kind of speak for them and you ask questions that they didn't know they needed the answers to. So, much appreciated. Have a great week, everybody.